I am Garrett Sprouse, chair of the board.
Started.
Today is September 27th, 2024, and the time is 10 a.m. I now call to order this meeting of the board of directors of the Surplus Lines Stamping Office of Texas. This meeting is being held in person in the offices of the Surplus Lines Stamping Office at 1601 East Pflugerville Parkway, Suite 3301, Pflugerville, Texas 78660. Written notice of this meeting, the proposed agenda, and all related meeting materials were provided to the Texas Department of Insurance Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division and her designees on September 5th, 2024, in accordance with the Surplus Lines Stamping Office of Texas Plan of Operations, Section 2C2. Written notice of this meeting and its related agenda were submitted to the Office of the Secretary of State and published on September 20th, 2024, in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. All board members were notified of this meeting on September 5th, 2024. A conference call-in number was provided to members of the public in the public meeting notice. I will now call the roll to confirm which board members are participating in today's meeting. Jason Cables.
Present.
Pete Harrison is not present. Mark Koch. Jeff Klein.
Present.
Nick Lawrence is not present. Leslie Liljenberg.
Present.
Leslie Milvo, Leslie Milvo is not here, and Ezekiel Nathal. A quorum of five or more members is present pursuant to the Texas Government Code, Section 551.125B2, Stamping Office Plan of Operations, Section 2C2. I believe all board members who are participating are present in person.
Yes.
The following stamping office management staff, council, consultants, and liaisons are present. Please affirm your attendance for the record when I call your name.
Right, Brandon, Executive Director.
Present.
John Ogg, Director of Finance.
Present.
Denise Amasquita, Director of Human Resources. Cheyenne Herrera, Director of Operations, who is via Teams.
Present.
Yolanda Stone, Director of IT.
Present.
Dan Strickland, General Counsel.
Present.
Paul Rainey, TSLA liaison, who I believe is via Teams.
Present.
Sharmila Subedi.
Present.
And are there any additional stamping office staff members, liaisons, or consultants attending in person?
Tagamans, administrative assistant.
And Denise, can you please introduce us to any stamping office staff attending via phone or Teams?
Yes. We have via Teams Ariel Rosario, Catherine Hall, Christian Robinson, Dalton Moore, Jennifer Dickey, Christian Porter, Robin Porter, Ruben Olivares, Chantel Jackson, Toby Pick, Tyler Padot, and Yuba Daha.
Thank you. Also attending today from the Texas Department of Insurance are Barbara Lazard Hernandez.
Present.
And Andrew Guerrera.
Here.
Are there any other representatives of the Texas Department of Insurance, the Texas Comptroller, or legislative offices attending in person or by telephone or Teams? Hearing none, we'll move on. Before we get started, have a few housekeeping reminders. Antitrust activity or discussion are prohibited at all stamping office functions. This prohibition includes the exchange of information concerning individual company rates, coverages, market practices, claim settlement practices, expenses, or any other competitive aspect of an individual company's operations. We'll not have a public comment section. Public and media attendees listening by telephone should mute their lines at all times. Representatives of the state agencies and members of the public are welcome to observe or record this board meeting, but please refrain from asking questions or interjecting comments during the board's deliberations. The state agency personnel present may be asked questions about their agency's policies if those questions relate to an agenda item. Members, council, and staff should identify themselves by full name when speaking. Please mute your microphone or telephone when not speaking. Agenda item two, discussion and appropriate approval of the June 28th, 2024 meeting minutes. Everyone was provided a copy of the June 28th, 2024 meeting minutes. Are there any corrections? Any further discussion? There being no further discussion, do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
Jason Cables will move that motion.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Jeff Klein.
Right. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Ayes have it, the motion passes. Now, discussion and appropriate action on insurance policies. Greg Brandon, the executive director, will present this agenda item.
Thank you, Pierce. Good morning, everyone. So just a reminder, the plan of operation requires that we do this. So you can see the everything in bold from section 3A8. The standing office must prepare a detailed summary of bonds and insurance policies to include coverage, policy dates, premium and limits for review and approval by the board at the third quarter board meeting and prior to procurement or renewal. That's important because we've got two policies that don't renew. So we will do this again for those two particular policies in December as well. So you can go to the next slide. We'll start off by reviewing the two policies that renew in January, and then we'll move on to the four that renew in October. And I'll need a board motion in order to renew those. So first one is cyber liability. You can see the current policy expired January 2024. Our broker is Plus. The current premium is $7,300 primary and $7,250 in excess for a total of $14,500. We do not have any renewal indications yet. We won't get those until late November or December. So don't know where we're headed. But the coverage details, you can see it's privacy and security liability limits are $3 million on the primary and $2 million on the excess. Got a $50,000 deductible, and you can see the two participants there. On the primary is Spinnaker, which is also known as Calbell, and then Continental's Casualty. Next slide, please. The other one that we will not be reviewing or renewing. We've got a three-year policy for fun. Marsh MMA is the broker for that policy. The total premium for 2 years was $5,066. As I mentioned, we don't have a renewal, but we do have, we actually just got this email the other day. We were expecting an additional premium for the Fidelity coverage extension for our new pension. And turns out that was extended for no additional premium. So there's no change in cost to this policy at all. And you can see it's a $500,000 limit with a $5,000 deductible, all through Zurich Insurance. Next slide. The next couple of slides are the policies that we are going to renew. And this is a big one. The biggest policy we have really is the D&O policy. So this program, in my relatively brief history with the company, this was always the most challenging placement that we had. So this is a big program for everybody, obviously, and you can see the current premium is $41,674, and the renewal premium is $43,129 total. The coverage really hasn't changed. You can see it has A, B, and C sides. The employment practices liability is embedded in this program, and then importantly, for this year, the fiduciary liability that is sublimited to $1 million through the primary carrier, and there is no drop down from Evanston. So, the important part of that is this covers, so instead of buying a Fidelity bond, this covers our pension program as well. So, the Fidelity coverage comes from both this program and the crime. Now, we did have an additional premium with this. It was about a $1,000 increase. You can see it was, the primary program was $16,996 and originally quoted as flat. So Plus did a great job of broking this deal. But when we went to them with the new new pension saying we needed to extend coverage around that, it was a $1,000 additional premium for that. But that's still substantially less than a normal Fidelity bond would be. So it was a great deal for us, and it was a great broke on behalf of Plus to get us that deal. And then coverage-wise, outside of the Fidelity Labs, there's no changes that were stopped. This was, frankly, a fantastic renewal. Great. Then next slide, another one we'll be renewing December 1 is the liabilities. Plus is also a broker. that was renewed at flat. Current premium was $10,493. And it did go down a little bit. The renewal premium went down to $10,489. And that is thanks to you fine folks and the Commissioner of Insurance reducing the stamping fee. So that is the difference. And you can see the coverage details there. It's professional liability with limits and $2,500 deductible. No changes to any coverage limits nor deductible were requested for that particular program. Next program is the business owners program. There we go. Marsh MMA is our broker for that. This policy expires on the 7th of October. Did go down a little bit, another good renewal for us. So the Hartford is our carrier on this program, has a $5,000 deductible. And the current premium was $7,457, and that renewal would be $6,839. That's for coverage of all the things inside this building primarily. And the replacement value was bumped up a little bit. It was $400,000 last year, 10% So obviously, we don't own the building, so it's really only the contents that we're insuring with this thing. So, and it also has some liability coverage, and we use this instead of buying insurance from the car. If we rented a car, we wouldn't buy that insurance because we'd use this program and things like that. So, another good renewal for us. We'll take forward. And finally, the other one is workers' compensation. Obviously, this is an important policy for everything, but there's no real change here. Workers' compensation is priced entirely off of the payroll. So as payroll goes up, premium goes up. Marsh is our broker, our carrier on this program. Rates have come in relatively flat, so really the reason for the increase is the increase in payroll. And you can see there is no deductible for anything. We have $1 million limit on employee liability and this comp program, there's no deductible whatsoever. So it's first dollar coverage. Yeah, well, if you lack familiarity with workers' comp, there's no limit technically on a workers' comp. So that $1 million limit is solely for employers. And that concludes. Does anybody have any questions about any of this coverage? I'm happy to put it up there.
I just had a minor question. The payroll affects the comp. With the addition of other employees, was any appreciable addition to premium in the other coverages you just discussed because you've added three employees? Or it's minimal?
No, not really. Yeah, that's not necessarily payroll dependent on where comp is. And what happens with comp, right? They audit all of that. So even this number will be audited. And there is typically additional premium associated with this option. So it's... yeah, this is just covering the carrying cost, if you will, of workers' compensation. Pretty good renewal.
Thank you.
And just out of curiosity, the two different brokerages, is it just because they had a market for it for each one of the products? I mean, the MMA, I mean, the Marsh and then the other one?
Yeah, well, technically, plus it's technically the excess carrier.
Okay.
They've done... a lot of our, they broke the primaries on those programs that they represent as well and have for us for a long time. And then Marsh, I'm trying to remember the story of how we got to Marsh. Happened before I got here. But so I have not changed agents or brokerage services. But was it 2019? Yeah. So
it was difficult to obtain the insurance during that time. So
okay.
It was changed based on that. Thanks.
Is there any further discussion or any questions for Greg on the insurance policy presentation? Mr. Brandon, do you have a recommendation for the board? Motion at this time.
Yes, I do. I recommend that the board approve the proposed insurance program as presented and grant me, the executive director, the authority to finalize and purchase the coverage as presented.
Do I hear a motion for the board to approve the proposed insurance program as presented and grant the executive director authority to finalize and purchase the coverage as presented?
Jason Cables will move for that.
Second, Leslie Lilgenberg.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
opposed say no. The ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you. We'll stay with Greg for the executive director report and appropriate action.
Great. Okay, so you can see here the company overview. I always like to start with this slide. There have been no changes to the organization. We still rely on the four pillars you see here with Cheyenne handling operations, Jolanda handling all the IT, Donna with finances, and Denise with HR. Total of 27 employees currently, and that's what we have budgeted for 2025 as well. So a couple of exciting things have happened since our last meeting back in June. We hired three new folks on July 8th, and Cheyenne will speak to that a little bit more in her report. The other exciting thing is we have an employee that has announced that he is retiring. So we're very excited for that because in the history of this company, we have never had an individual contributor retire from this organization. So he is our first. Now, granted, he's only lived here or only worked here for a little over 3 years, but we are going to ensure that we handle all of that in a way that shows how much we value him. And I think Cheyenne's going to maybe speak to that a little bit more as well. But I just dropped that in her lap yesterday. So it piled up. But we're super proud. The individual that's retiring changed the way we look at hiring, quite frankly, in this organization. We were not, prior to his arrival, we were not really thinking we could or trying very hard to find people with experience to work here. And when we hired him, he changed our entire perspective on what the caliber of talent that we could attract to this organization. So, and that has paid off across the board when you consider not only on the operation side, but the ability to attract and retain developers to this organization as well. Really, I will say, Gary gave us the confidence to really believe attract high caliber talent to this organization. So one thing I mentioned to you, we have 27 and we've budgeted for 27. And if we have one retiring, that means we have someone that should be hiring. So Sholanda is going to try to hire a front-end developer to really kind of round out her shop. We would love to do that this year, but we're getting kind of close to holidays and things like that, so we may not have the time. But we would love to hire one more developer, particularly with experience handling front-end. Now, all of our developers, she will tell you this, all of our developers are full-stack guys, so front-end is not foreign to them, but we want somebody with specific front-end experience to kind of round out the team. She may talk a little bit more about that as well. Next slide. Okay, you can see it. Let's talk about premium. Just a reminder, the blue line is the year-to-date line, and all the bars below it are the four previous years. And so as you can see, through August, each month, except for March, is a new record for that month. And the year-to-date total is just north of $11.1 billion. So it's been premium-wise, every month is at or near a record for that month. Which, as you can see from all the bars below it, is not an uncommon theme in years past either. Next slide.
Item count. Now, this is a little bit different story. We started talking about this last year, but we look really same thing. So the blue line is year to date, and the bars below it are all the previous years. And you can see where the gold bars, the far right hand, that's 2023. This is when item count really started to tick up and start breaking records month after month for those years. And that has occurred every month of this year as well. You can see the year-to-date number, almost 880,000 items so far through the August. And every one of those months has been for that month for item count. So, frankly, kudos to the entire organization for having the ability to digest this level of effort that's coming to us. Super proud of our organization for being able to handle all that and frankly make it look routine. And I added one slide here because I get asked this occasionally and I haven't gone over it before, but this is stripping out specifically the policy. So item count and policy count are two different things. So this is specific to policies.
And we occasionally get asked, you know, what does the policy count? Policy count followed a very similar trend, with the exception of August, did not break the record for the all-time record for August for policy count. But you can see total number of policies is also rising similarly to the items, includes a whole lot of things that are not policies. So that number is always going to be higher. But the policy count itself, when you think about, yeah, that's the crazy thing. You think about just the logistics here, 550,000 policies so far this year, and, you know, 71,500 policies. That is a lot of material and data to digest for it's hard to really point to any one month and say this is what's going on in the industry, but for this organization, organizationally, we're doing a fantastic job of digesting more than we ever have. So it's a really busy year for everybody so far, but we've done a fantastic job of handling it to the best of our. Do you guys have any questions with any of those slides? And we will have both Diane and Shalonda will be speaking as well. So if you have any specific operational or IT discussions, we're happy to either talk about it now, or we can get them to as well. So happy to answer whatever questions you might have.
Is there any further discussion or any questions on the standing office update? So Brandon, do you have a recommendation for a board motion at this time?
I do not.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Moving on to the operations director report and inquiry section, which will be presented by Cheyenne Herrera, the director of operations.
Thanks, Garrett. Good morning, everyone. Can everyone hear me okay? Great. I will start with an update on new hires. Greg went into that just a little bit, but on July 8th, we had three new policy analysts, Jennifer, Robin, and Ruben, start their training journey with us. Each of these folks are bringing a substantial amount of insurance experience. Some of them have many, many years of specifically surplus lines experience working for some agencies or brokers that you may or may not be familiar with, but I won't go into the details of that. Feedback from our training team remains consistent and very positive about these folks. They are progressing really quickly through our training materials, and as the training and practice of entries into our system continue, we're expecting what we call the class of 2024 to continue their progress at a much more rapid pace than we've had for any of our previous training groups, right? This is where Greg was saying, you know, hiring and scouting talent that actually have that surplus lines experience really changes the way that we look at things, approach things, and do things all together. For our existing team, I hate to sound like a broken record, but as a broken record, performance remains outstanding for everyone, and all of the team, including our new folks, are working toward their individual and professional development goals for the year. We continue to focus on what we're called practice makes progress and progress makes perfect. We use that layered and hands-on training approach to make for sure, you know, that experience of just performing the duties over and over and having that exposure to things gets us to where we need to be. As far as training and detailed information, Ariel, who is a policy analyst too, Nathan, a senior policy analyst, and Chantel, who is our lead policy analyst too, are all working toward their first designation from the institutes. And Yuba, who is our financial analyst, recently completed a financial analysis of insurance companies' coursework through the New York Institute of Finance. And last but not least, Greg mentioned this a little bit, but after three and maybe a quarter amazing years with us, Gary, who is a policy analyst too, is going to retire in early December. He came to the stamping office with more than 15 years of surplus lines experience, so which is amazing. And his contributions to the team and organization have really been immeasurable. He changed the way we scouted for talent, and he was our first real employee that did not reside in the Austin area. So he really challenged us to think about how we can manage that, where we're used to normally just having people in the office all the time and training and learning that way. So really challenge us to step up our training game as well. As he mentioned, he is the first individual contributor or non-executive or leadership employee to retire in SLTX's 36-year history. We are so excited to see Gary move on to the next stage in his life, but we are really going to miss him. I cannot say enough about how we're going to miss him from work and individual and personal perspective. So congratulations, Gary, to being our first retiree. I will move on to my next bullet point. I only have one slide for y'all, so not as many as I've had in the past. Just to recap some statutorily required deliverables. I can never get that one right on the first time. We continue to generate and deliver monthly and quarterly reports to TDI, as you probably have heard me talk about in the past. We have our monthly lay filing reports, the listing of policies written through ineligible insurers, which remain outstanding for 60 days, and kind and class reports. Also, the 2023 annual late filing report, which was delivered to TDI in mid-March of this year, per 15.114D of the Texas Administrative Code, is now transitioned to enforcement as defined by Section 981.105 of the Insurance Code. We are continuing to support TDI's Enforcement Division by providing details about items in question, insurance or administrative code requirements related to a specific policy scenario, or any other information that enforcement may need to investigate and or close each case. The TWIA report, that's the Texas Windstorm Insurance Association, for those that have a little trouble remembering every single possible acronym that's in the insurance world. We generated and confirmed the data and notified TWIA's actuarials of its availability. We really can't say when those actuarials will actually utilize and consume the data on the report, but it's in their hands now. And as a reminder, the TWIA report is generated annually by the stamping office and reflects property premium reported for each insurer during the previous year, categorizing that by coverage and type and whether the risk is located on the seacoast or in what we call the remainder of the state. And it allows any calculation for necessary assessments for any companies that are admitted affiliates for those surplus lines and insurance carriers. Any questions on those deliverables or any on those reports or deliverables? Nope. Okay.
Diane,
my next. Sure. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt. It's Jeff. No, I was curious with the increased volume, is the late filing volume up or constant, or what are the trends there?
It's really, so if we look at really just the percentage of increase that we see for policies, we're not seeing that equivalent percentage increase year over year for the late filing report. Now, keeping in mind, though, that this is for 2023 filing, so we will not have the annual report generated by statutory requirement until March of 2025. But if we look at how we've seen historical, we've seen the numbers remain relatively the same. There are some minor increases in maybe agent counts, but not, we're not seeing that substantial, you know, growth of that we can see in those trend lines from Greg. So I don't expect that we'll see that going forward either.
Thank you so much.
No problem. So my next bullet point is insurer analysis. So as you may recall, we are required to deliver and provide evidence to TDI that an insurer meets eligibility requirements and provide an evaluation of each insurance contract and surplus lines insurer. That eligibility requirements is specific to foreign or U.S. insurers and DSLIs, again, another acronym, domestic surplus lines insurers. The alien or non-U.S. insurers reflected on the NAIC quarterly listing are automatically eligible, so we're not doing those reviews. Those are just automatically eligible to write in Texas per the NRRA. So if we look at that year to date, we have the stamping office has completed 7 new insurer recommendations and 2 are currently in progress. Those 2 are re-domesticating to Texas. So they are being evaluated as DSLIs. So year to date, we have 15 new insurers or syndicates becoming eligible to write business in Texas. The breakdown of that is 7 DSLIs are foreign, which were SLTX recommendations, and 8 alien, which came on board from the NAIC quarterly listing. We've also had 3 alien insurers, again from the NAIC quarterly listing, become ineligible, meaning they are no longer eligible to write business in Texas. So I'll go on to my super brief SMART recap. So we will continue, as I've said many times, and Shalonda has mentioned this in her past presentations as well, we're going to continue technical debt releases. We're going to work on enhancements and process improvements, remembering that SMART is going to be an evergreen system, meaning that we're going to continue to make process improvements, and that really SMART becomes that living application growing from a technology and feature standpoint. We will begin releasing full delete capability within the next few weeks, and we've begun a deep dive in testing and confirming the much anticipated update feature. This is, like I said, the most anticipated process improvement because it's going to immeasurably simplify the correction workflow if and when a user makes a typo with their filing. Maybe they typed an extra letter in the name insured, or they misselected a coverage or a class code. The process will be very simple instead of the really tedious and painful current correction process. Development for our policy audit and checkwork modules remains in progress, but we are continuing to perform these duties, even though that feature doesn't yet exist fully in SMART, because we're using a manual process until the development is complete. Any questions on any of that SMART update? Any questions on anything else? No, great. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Cheyenne. Is there any further discussion or any questions on this item? Ms. Ferrer, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
No, sir, I do not.
All right. Thank you, Cheyenne, and congratulations to Gary. Moving on to the ITS Director Report and Appropriate Action. And for this agenda item, it'll be Shalonda Stone, the Director of ITS, to present.
Hey, Cheyenne was short. I'll try to top her. You can go to that. So normally we go through this in detail, but none of our milestones have changed. Cheyenne covered a whole bunch of them when she was talking. We're still chugging along to make SMART a serverless environment, which means we don't have to physically do hard updates on SMART, which means there won't be any downtime to SMART. So we're still working towards that. That is still one of our big goals that we're working on. SMART backlog, of course. Website refresh, we're kind of pushing that along a little bit. We're waiting on our new developer to come on board whenever they get here. We're still working on the SMART enhancement, SMART connector. We're still doing little tweaks here and there. And then process improvements is the constant everyday thing as we go along, as we're starting to develop new things, add new things, take things away. And just overall, it's constant. Next slide. This is the roadmap that we've talked about, that I've talked about plenty of times. A lot of it still has not changed, so I won't really get into a whole lot of detail on it. Still, technical debt is always going to be one of those ones that's going to stay on the roadmap. It's always at the end, but it creeps itself up here and there as needed when enhancements are needed or requested from the from our brokers and agents. So that kind of gets adjusted there on the roadmap along the way, but pretty much we are still currently, this is still what's left on the roadmap. We've removed the .NET upgrade and a couple other things, but pretty much we're still chugging along here. So as far as updates, staff, they are doing amazing. I am so grateful for the staff that we have on board. Our developers, we have Dalton, Jay, Rain, and Kenneth. And then we have Rodolfo as our IT support, and couldn't ask for a better team. Adding to the team is going to be one of those things. We got to get a good fit, but we also got to get a good person in here. So I'm excited to start that in the foreseeable future, to look for an additional person. Our staff training, our developers went to KCDC. We've never done it before. We sent Rain, Jay, Kenneth, to KCDC for developer training. We've never been able to send that many developers out on one time, so it was actually good that we did it. It was a good milestone for us. They learned a lot. They brought back a lot. Our IT support, which is Rodolfo, he attended Microsoft's Tech Mentor training, and we still continue to use our peer-to-peer support, peer-to-peer training, and we also do training online with Udemy now, and that's been a great adoption into the whole entire organization. Cheyenne's teams has been killing it on there, so that has been a great change from Pluralsight. We still have some additional training coming up and plans training coming up towards the end of the year. We have one other developer going to QCon, which is in San Diego. And then I will be attending Microsoft Live 360 training in Orlando in November. Though both of those are in November. As far as IT updates, our Azure subscription was changed from an MCA to an MCAE. And those are the Microsoft Service Customer Agreement. Our Microsoft Customer Agreement was changed to a Microsoft Customer Agreement Enterprise Support. Whole mouthful. We did all that. It was done. The change was done in the middle of the day. It was a lot of prep planning on my half to get it done. Nobody even noticed it happened, which was great. All of our resources were shifted and moved over to a different, we call them, they call them like host sections inside of Azure. So we actually switched over to a new host section. Basically, the whole change was to allow us to leverage what Microsoft calls reservations. This will allow us to do a reduction in our Microsoft cost between 30 and 60% on the most of our resources that we have running inside of Azure. We also have a dedicated support team as well as a dedicated representative, and we are now able to obtain additional future credits. We have had some credits through Microsoft, and in order for us to keep obtaining them, we have to switch over to an MCAE. There was no additional cost, no additional change in our servicing and anything that we have. It's just basically we added enterprise on the end of it. We continue to review our logs and vulnerability scans daily for anomalies. And just as I've never done it before, but just as kind of like some of the stats that we have, page overviews from a 10-day average. This was done probably a couple weeks ago. Our page views, we get about 2,312 page views on the sltx.org website. I have not figured out a way to track SMART yet, but we're working on that. Well, I'm working on that. Attacks-wise, we've had 437 attacks, and we have blocked 330 IPs. So those are people that are trying to do malicious attacks or DDoS attacks, which is basically they'll try to send packets into the system or try to use our website as an email route so that way they can send malicious content out and it looks like it's coming from us, but it's not. So that is constantly monitored on a daily basis, probably all day, every day. Proof point is our email stats. So we have 10-day average, well, not 10-day average, on a 10-day average total. We have approximately 4,000 plus emails on a daily. 2,000 of them are blocked and about 3,000 of the emails are delivered. And when I mean blocked, those are either malicious content, emails with attacks, people trying to then like email attachments for people to get in. Some of them are a lot of sales. We most of them are sales pitches. Through Proof Point, our employees are actually able to notify and block emails and say they are malicious, but a lot of them are Proof Point themselves updating the content constantly, or I'll get in and I'm like, okay, that's not even real emails. We do have some that come through. Our team is very good about sending them to me. I get a lot of emails sent to me asking me, are they real emails or not emails? So we've gotten into the habit of kind of questioning our emails internally if they do get through. And I'm so proud of the organization and the whole for doing that, because we were at a point that we were not doing it, but I'm glad we're at a point that we are doing it. So that is it for me.
Thank you. There any further discussion or any questions on this item? Ms. Stone, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
No, sir, I do not.
Thank you, Shalonda. All right, discussion and appropriate action for the employee handbook revisions. At this time, we'll turn over to Denise Amoskita, the Director of Human Resources, who will present the item.
Thank you. This is very exciting. I know that I don't get to present in every meeting, and I'm sure you guys don't want to hear about HR in every meeting. Okay, this is something good. And this is definitely good. But I want to open it up with providing a quick reminder and highlight section 2B2 of the plan of operation. It states that the board must employ an executive director who will be responsible for the day-to-day management of the stamping office. The executive director will perform duties under the direction of the board and under policies developed by the board. The policies must be submitted for review to the department's deputy commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division or the deputy commissioner's designee. If the deputy commissioner determines that any policy is inadequate, he or she may require changes to the policy. We've complied with this as we sent all of the information to the Department of Insurance, and we've also shared the information with the board, and we worked internally to make sure that this happened before. You guys got all that information. Next page. Based on this, I really wanted to start providing a bit of historical. I know we have pretty much almost newborn members since the last meeting we had. And the reason why we're proposing a revised version of the employee handbook. Back in 2019, during the change in leadership process, we did propose a revision of the employee handbook. And that version was rewritten by the then established firm. And it is the document that we are currently utilizing today. This process was done very differently. It was with very little internal input, and it does not reflect the employment best practices that TDI has tasked us with, and that we work so hard to make sure that we promote and all the time with our employees. When Greg came in 2020, we briefly discussed the handbook. Of course, as a new employee, he went over the information. However, things shift pretty quickly because COVID. And so he was here for maybe a week, and we changed our entire focus from being an entirely in office to working remotely within a few days. And so the focus did shift into that, and we put this in the back burner. Since then, our entire business model has changed. Our culture, our desire to, as Greg always mentions, attract and retain talent. We keep that very close to our best, and we want to make sure that we do that, and that is our main focus. We as leadership got together and agreed that our policies should reflect the reality of our operations today, and that also needs to align with current labor laws, because labor laws has changed since then as well. We keep track of all of that. And so we wanted to make sure that we worked together internally to make sure that all of that was taken in consideration. I appreciate that Greg gave me the trust and really trusted all of us to work together on this and make sure that it happened, keeping in mind laws and employees. And in 2023, so it's been a year's worth of work, we began working together to review the handbook. We had several meetings. We had discussions during that past year as we all play a role in ensuring compliance. We took a full deep dive and evaluated every single policy of the current handbook, providing a great opportunity to discuss what the future of the organization should look like from the HR standpoint and legal standpoint. And in early 2024, the process of presenting the handbook to the board was placed on hold because we were waiting for two items: full legal review, which it was for sure that something that we wanted to do, and we also wanted to focus on the pension plan, making sure that the board and TDI had all of that information and all of that went through before we presented any of this. And in February of this year, we approached Stan. Thank you, Stan, with the desire to review the proposed handbook. Council then recommended a labor law attorney, and in April, we began working with two labor law attorneys from Mitchell Williams. I cannot say anything but great things. We worked so hard. We met. I've never had such interaction with labor laws as we did for this handbook. They were very hands-on. The communication was great. They were busy. At times we were busy. But nonetheless, the communication was phenomenal. The handbook looked like a Christmas tree. They provided so much, meaning like all the edits and colors and changes, but they provided so much feedback. They quoted the law. I mean, it was a great, great team effort working on that. And again, I thank Greg for giving me the opportunity to work with them and trusting that we were going to get this done the right way. And so with that in mind, the revised document relies on concise message. I mean, it's 2024. We don't need a 100-page handbook. It's easy to understand and aligns with labor laws and definitely with our culture as well. And as you may see on, do you guys have any questions here so far before I move forward? Okay, so next page. As you will see on the next two slides, we wanted to be detailed with the board as to exactly what we change. So some policies were combined, two policies are new, and a few are eliminated with council's guidance. And we wanted to show the board what was eliminated, if something was merged with another policy, where did that policy went, and what was eliminated. If you could see here, most of the items that were eliminated were policies that were related to building our previous building, policies that should be building management policies and should not be in our handbook. We will follow building management policies just like we will in this building, but we didn't see a need to include them on our handbook as our own because they really are not our own policies. Next page. And then this next page reflects the table of content of the current handbook that we're proposing. The policies, the table of content of the current document, the policies in green are the new policies. We're also rearranged the entire handbook. We split it into sections. Section one is culture. Section two is business guidelines. Section three is pay, employment guidelines, and benefits, and section four is legal. These were arranged based on business operations, easier flow, and recommendation by legal as well. Any questions so far? Again, Stan, thank you so much for this opportunity. The team was incredible in working together, recommending everything, going back and forth. Really worked really hard to make this happen, and we would have not been able to do it with legal advice. Okay. So this is...
I can't take the credit for that other than I'm glad I was able to connect you with Nate and the team at Mitchell Williams because they are the top-notch employment lawyers.
Absolutely. We brought our handbook to 2024. So any questions or comments on this? Yes.
I think you guys did a great job.
Thank you, Bart.
I read it and felt myself wanting to go to work.
There is a position available
with Gary retiring.
We have a position here.
Yeah. Gary's leaving.
An opportunity to review a number of these over the years and to write them and create them, and I think y'all did a great job.
Thank you so much. I think that the Greg has very clear expectations not only for the employees but for us as well as management, and we want to make sure that we display that for our employees as well. The same kind of expectations that we have of them, they should have of us, and it really truly reflects who we are today and who we want to continue to be and comply with TDI's requirements always.
And Denise, this high level overview is very helpful to the board. It's very clear to us.
For my presentation.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion or any questions on this item? Denise, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
Yes, I do. I propose a motion to have the board approve the proposed employee handbook revision as presented with an implementation date of January 1, 2025, also with the understanding of potential further discussion and/or TDI comments. And if any should arise, we will present any further discussion in the October meeting.
Is there a motion?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? If all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Ayes have it, the motion passes. Thank you, Denise. Okay. Item 8, the discussion and appropriate action, Finance and Audit Committee report and related items, which will be presented by Jason Cables, Chair of the Finance and Audit Committee.
You. The Finance and Audit Committee, consisting of myself and members Nick Lawrence and Ezekiel Nathal, met yesterday, September 26, 2024. Donna Ogg, Director of Finance, presented the 2024 Finance Year-to-Date Update and the 2025 Standing Office Proposed Budget to the Committee. The committee voted to accept and refer the 2025 Proposed Budget as presented to the Board to consider for submission the Deputy Commissioner for the Financial Regulation DI in accordance with the surplus line stamping office plan of operation. At this time, I'll ask Donna Ogg to continue the presentation of this agenda item.
Thank you. So we're presenting our financial results through August. And as we can see, for stamping fees, we were over budget in August 2% or $12,700. And over budget 1%, $43,000 for the year. Investment income was over budget 86% or $51,750 for August. And for the year, we were over 54% or $297,300 a year, which means that our investments earned more than what we predicted when we created this budget a year ago. Total operating expenses were under budget for August, $66,200 or 10%, and under $1.4 million or 22% for the year. Now we'll break those operating expenses down. Salaries and benefits were under budget 13%, $52,300 for the month, and 29% or $1.2 million for the year. We had been 5 heads short on our staff from what we budgeted at the beginning of the year. We did, as previously mentioned, hired 3 at the beginning of July. And also our pension fund funding was budgeted to happen in January, and that did not occur until September. Professional services were under budget by 20% or $6,000 for August, and under budget 7% or almost $22,800 for the year. And in IT, the underage is due to RSI not being engaged since we rolled to the new version of the database, along with MIS ending earlier than expected. So that will be an ongoing reason for our professional services to be under for the rest of the year. In operations, 50% of the Lemon Light SOW was paid in January, where it was budgeted evenly out throughout the year. So each month we'll notice a savings there. Conference and education was under budget 60% or $4,700 for August, and 67% or $48,500 for the year, due to the timing of and quantity of budgeted conferences and trips. Travel and entertainment were under budget by 92% or $5,600 for the month, and 50% or $28,000 for the year, for the same reason just mentioned for conference and education. So the most impactful thing on our financials for August and year to date was last year we implemented based on GASB 87, we were required to present our leases as operating leases, which means they are on the balance sheet as assets and liabilities. And also as part of that record keeping, we no longer show those lease expenses as lease expenses. They're now amortized. So I did a year-to-date true-up of that. We started with NetLease, which is a platform to help us track all this And once we converted to QuickBooks Online, which we did this summer, NetLease does an automatic update monthly, which makes it a lot easier for us. So we did that true up in August. So we're seeing occupancy as that negative and G&A being over budget. That's merely a reclass from one category to another. And the three leases that we're representing are the largest is office space. And then we have a copier and a postage machine. They're very minor, but this is all in compliance to what the government regulation is. And that's what the difference that you're seeing there.
This is Garrett Sprouse. Just to understand what those differences, it's not that there was a huge change in anticipated expenses, it's just how they are calculated and allocated. That's where the change comes from.
Correct. And it's not a dollar for dollar based on the amortization and the interest expense. So when these monthly journal entries are done, when we pay the bills for the office and the other two leases, that expense hits lease expense. Then at the end of the month with this reclass, that expense is zeroed out and then it goes down to amortization and interest. And it's all based on the length of each lease and the interest rate is pretty slick. This net lease program I've been very impressed with, not only their capabilities, but also the support they've been able to provide. It's been great. So we started this last year before the end of the audit. This was all based on Calhoun's recommendation, and they recommended NetLease for us to use, as they also use. So it's been a really good move forward.
Yeah, I see. If you combine the variance of those two items, it's roughly a $6,000 difference. So it's minimal in the grand scheme of things. Yes. Thank you for the explanation.
Yeah, no, thanks for paying attention to that. G&A expenses were over budget, $99,300 or 62% for August, and over $99,100 or 8% for the year, based on what I just described for interest and amortization. Now that we have all of our plan, we were able to budget for next year, so we wouldn't see this much of a variance. Also, we received our leasehold improvements for this space. We didn't receive the invoice for until March. So now that we're amortizing that also increased that line item, which we had not budgeted for because we didn't know about it. So that'll be trued up in next year's budget, which we'll see. Contingency, which we don't use ever, but are required to have, resulted in $3,200 savings for the month, $31,700. So we had an operating income for August of $217,800, and year to date, an operating income of just over $1 million. We had budgeted for an operating income of $87,000 for August, and a loss year to date of $749,000. Our change in investments value increased $222,000 for August and year to date $365,000.
This is Garrett Sprouse again. On the operating income, the difference between the budget and the actual, are the primary factors to that the pension not hitting yet and taking a while to hire the additional employees? Are those the two main factors, or is there anything
and
else I'm missing?
Income, making right. A lot more on our investments. Yes.
Thank you.
Welcome. Any other questions regarding our financial update?
Donna?
Yes.
It's not in here, but we do occasionally read Greg's activity reports. Something caught my eye, and I was just curious about the significance of it. I thought I saw something that said the stamping fee is running or normally running at, is currently running at like 60% of normal expenses. Without regard to the numbers, I was just curious about the significance of tracking that. Why is that important? Or is it?
It's to show how much we're actually able to fund our expenses with that income coming in, because ideally the purpose of our lowering the stamping fee was to burn off our excess.
Right.
So that's, you know, if we bring in less money and we have our expenses, we're going to have to dip into that reserve. We just haven't had to do that much lately.
And the stamping fee is a major source of income, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks.
You're welcome.
I could have had a V8. I'm glad I did.
And then our fund balance, which what we were just talking about, we went into the year with almost $32.7 million, which was a little over $20 million over the maximum supposed to have for the year, which this year was $12,537,000, almost $538,000. And as a reminder, maximum is calculated by the 2 times the average of 5 years worth of audited expenses, and that's what the max is supposed to be. And so you can see well over that, and that's our big focus, and has been for a few years, to try to burn that off. So with our year-to-date income of $1,380,000, that caused our fund balance at the end of August to be just over $34 million. So we're $21,500,000 and almost $30,000 over our current expense. Any questions on that?
Is there any discussion or questions for Ms. Ogg regarding the 2024 finance year-to-date update? Ms. Ogg, do you have a recommendation regarding the 2024 finance year-to-date update?
Do not.
Thank you, Donna. Please continue with your presentation on the remainder of this agenda item.
So now we're going to talk about our proposed budget for 25, and we present it as a year-over-year adopted budget for 24. Be operating under, and what we are proposing for next year. And per section 3A4 of our plan of operation, the stamping office must submit a proposed budget for the stamping office's operating and capital expenses and contingent following calendar year to the board's audit and finance committee, which we did yesterday. So for revenue, we're projecting a 4% or $285,000 increase in the stamping fee revenue based on our current fee, which as of August represented about 77% of the filings. So we remember that we changed our fee in January, and it takes a while. There's still other filings that come in under the old rate. But as of August, 77% are using that new lower rate. So as long as total premiums don't go off the charts, we should see our stamping fee revenue continue to decline, start to decline. Interest and other income increased by 40% or $319,000 because of the increase in the interest rate this year. So as our investments matured, we were reinvesting those funds at higher rates from 1 to 3 years. So we're realizing higher investment income. So we predict an overall increase in revenue of $602,800 or 7% over what we were budgeting for 2024. Now, onto our expenses, we budgeted salaries and benefits increased 7% or $447,600 for 25. That increase is due to merit raises for the staff, which of course always also increases associated labor burden, payroll taxes. And we never have our insurance renewals in this early when we need to prepare our budget. So Denise has projected anywhere from 8 to 30% increase for the different lines of health insurance. And if we get any of those renewals in, in the next month, we will update this with that actual number, but we're not counting on that. And then along with funding the maximum allowed to our pension plan, which we're budgeting for next year to happen in May, but we have put that into our budget.
This is Garrett Sprouse, and specifically regarding the maximum allowed for the pension plan, that is going above the 100% allocation based on the current staff. This is funding beyond that, as was approved at the last board meeting, correct?
Correct. So again, in an effort to reduce our surplus, we have the funds, might as well get ahead of it. And this won't be something that will happen in perpetuity. We level off, not.
That explains why that, or at least part of why that item is higher than the previous year by a fairly significant amount.
Yes. We're allowed, for 24, we didn't budget.
Beyond the 100%. Beyond,
yes, right. Exactly. Professional services decreased 10% or $45,000 due to Cyber 7 reducing the cost of the contract because of the decrease in the servers that need to support. So it's nice to see a decrease in service reflected in a decrease in cost. This doesn't always happen. There was a slight increase to accounting and audit due to the administrative fees associated with the pension. Now that we've got that in place and got projected cost associated, could budget for that. So I think I got distracted. Let me go back to salaries. So for next year, we're budgeting salaries and benefits to be 69% of total expenses, where for 24, we budgeted it to be 67%. And then for professional services, that represents 4% of our budgeted expenses versus 5% for 24. Conference and education decreased 8% or almost 8,300 and remained 1% of the budget. No great change there. Travel and entertainment increased 31% or 22,000 from 24, but still remained 1% of the budget. And that increase is due to developers attending an additional conference next year than this year. And we're sending two developers plus Shalonda, Florida, to a conference which was here last year. So we're having additional travel expenses, training, development. Occupancy and operating expenses decreased $153,550 or 27%. And that is because of what I described earlier with the GASB 87 and how our leases are presented on our financials. And then also, I told you that the lease, the three leases, the main one is our office. So that's represented $119,600 being removed from occupancy and operating, and then associated amortization being moved to G&A. Maintenance and repair of equipment was down 38% or over $3,300, as we're expecting lower costs. Software license and maintenance is decreasing $31,360 or 9% because we had a reduction in our servers that resulted in a lower Azure monthly. So occupancy and operating represented 4% of the budget for 25, where for 24 it was 6%. General and administrative increased $139,200 or 7%. Our insurance program is budgeted to decrease about 7%, and amortization is projected to increase $132,000 or 8% from 24, partly due to the leasehold improvements that I mentioned earlier with $188,770, so that's now being amortized on a monthly basis to the tune of about $21,000 for the year. And then also moving those three capital leases out of operating and occupancy down to G&A. Depreciation is projected to increase $10,650 or 26%, and that's due to additional computer equipment that was purchased. And so total G&A is 21% of total expenses versus 20 that was budgeted for this current year. Contingency shows an increase of $2,000 or 4%, which we would expect to see with the 4% increase in expenses, which total expenses increased $404,000 over 2024. So overall, the budget predicts an operating loss of $1,089,505 for 2025, as opposed to a budgeted loss for this current year of $1,288,000, which is a change of almost $200,000 or 15%. Our expected increase in revenue more than compensates for our increase in our budgeted expenses. Any questions regarding our budget?
This is Jason Cables. I just had one question. It's immaterial to everything, but I was just curious because you mentioned the expected insurance to go down, but earlier in the meeting when we looked at the policy renewals, they were largely flat. I was just curious if it was the two policies that you don't have quotes on.
Well, remember this. This is for 2025, so we're projecting what would happen next October.
Right? Next October.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Any discussion or questions for Ms. Ogg regarding the 2025 proposed budget? Ms. Ogg, do you have a recommendation regarding the 2025 proposed budget?
I do. I recommend that the board refer the 2025 proposed budget as presented to the Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division, PDI, in accordance with Section 2B7 of the Surplus Lines Stamping Office Plan of Operation.
I have a motion that this board refer the 2025 proposed budget as presented to the Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division of TDI in accordance with Section 2B7 of the Surplus Lines Stamping Office Plan of Operation.
Jason Cables will make that motion.
Second?
I'll second. Jeff Klein.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say no. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Thank you, Jason and Donna. Hey, agenda item 9, discussion and appropriate action, the Board Orientation Training Committee and Annual Charter Review. We'll turn to Leslie Losenberg, the chair of the Board Orientation and Training Committee.
Thank you. Earlier this morning, the Board Orientation Training Committee, consisting of myself and Bart Koch, met and reviewed the city charter. Under Section 2C11 of the Surplus Line Stamping Office Plan of Operation, each board committee must have a charter and the board must review the charters at least annually. This time, not made any changes.
Thank you, Leslie. Do you have a recommendation for the board?
No, not at this time.
All right, thank you. Moving on to number 10, the discussion and appropriate action, remaining 2024 board meeting dates. Greg Brandon.
Just a reminder, we have an obligation to meet sometime in October. So the way the plan of operation writes, it says you've got to have it. The board has to adopt a budget before November 1st. So that has usually meant the end of October, we have typically a Teams discussion, and it is solely intended to adopt the budget. Now, this might get a little weird if we have any feedback from TDI on the employee handbook. That would be a fantastic opportunity to do that. So there might be two agenda items, but generally speaking, the only agenda item would be to adopt the budget. And there's always some final tweaking between proposed and adopted, a few different numbers come in. So it's unlikely to be exactly the same, but it'll be largely the same as what you see. So typically We do that on a Friday, which this year would land on October 25th. But it's really up to you guys. It's your schedules, and you can do that. As long as we do it before November 1st, we're good. So any time that you guys can all meet, and the nice thing is we can do that one via Teams. And now Garrett will have to be here to meet OMA requirements. But we can do most of it to handle by Teams, and it shouldn't honestly take more than an hour. I don't anticipate that we would have any really significant changes in between the proposed and adopted. Whatever the changes there are, they would be minor. So it shouldn't take long at all. So
I think I will be traveling on the 5th, but would be here 28th through the 31st the following week.
Okay.
If that works.
We'll do whatever you guys want. So if the 28th, any day 28th through the 31st works for y'all, just give me one and we'll take it. Or we can choose one. Now, generally speaking, I'd say let's not wait until the 31st. Let's not push our luck. Yeah. So let's maybe do it on a Monday or a Tuesday, probably a Tuesday. That way you don't have to fuss with this stuff on a Monday. So Tuesday, the 29th.
It's good here. It works for me.
I'm in Omaha, but I can call in.
Oh, okay.
In Mexico City, depending on the time.
You have a preferred time? That'd be the other thing. It's morning. Because it's online, we can kind of do it whenever you, whatever fits you best. We don't have to start. We, generally speaking, when everybody's here, we try to start early. That way you can get back on a plane and go home. But sure. If we're doing this largely by Teams, we can really do it. So if afternoon works better, that's fine.
Since I'm local, it's easy for me to, since I'm the only one who has to physically be here.
Okay.
Anytime is fine with
me. Afternoon works better for me. I'll be flying in the morning.
Okay. 1 o'clock? 1 p.m. Central?
When's your flight? When do you get in?
I'm trying to figure out the time difference because I get in at.
I'll tell you right now.
Hour earlier there right now. I don't know how
okay.
They handle
so, 2.
2 p.m.
2 p.m. Central.
Central.
Good here.
Village.
Like I said, it shouldn't be take too long unless we get either some significant feedback on something major change, which I don't understand. The other date we need to decide on is December. We have to have a board meeting in December. And we've got to cram it somewhere in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, right? So this is a much harder one to schedule so that we can, because everybody has their own holiday schedule to work around as well. So usually the meeting is the second Friday of December. That's usually early enough that we're not really stepping into your holiday plans if you're taking off for the entire week of the holidays. But the holidays in the middle of the week this year. So we're kind of compressed. So this might be a little more challenging. The suggestion would be this makes it hard. So we can do it on the 10th, but there's a solid chance that we won't have finances for November closed by the 10th. And so you would be looking at only finances, even though we're meeting in December, you would only see October finance, September and October finances. So that's the hazard of backing it up too early is it is challenging for us to close the financial books to get them done for you to see, at least see November. And then remember, there's kind of a dead spot there where after the December meeting, we don't meet again until we get the audit done, which is usually late March. So you will go several months without seeing finances. So if we do it on December 10th, you won't see November, December, January, February, March. You won't see like almost half a year. So that's just a consideration. But I also recognize that if we push it to the 17th, that really kind of crams into everybody's holiday schedule. So
is Tuesday the preferred day? Meaning the 10th and the 7th.
Yeah. No.
Well, it's really up to you guys. The hard part is we can do it any day you want. But we also recognize that you've got a job to go home to and come here from. So that's usually why we put it on the weekend, at the end of the week. So a Thursday, Friday is usually why. But that doesn't mean if you guys want to meet on a Tuesday, we'll meet.
But the 10th is Tuesday, so
that's what I was asking about.
12th and 13th.
Oh, I'm sorry. It should have been the 13th, yeah. Friday the 13th, yeah.
Black cat. For me, we think we would have financials by the 13th.
I will make sure we do.
She thinks we will.
We will.
Yeah, we absolutely can
combine
will.
The meetings that one day also to make easier.
That's true. This Finance and Audit Committee meeting does have to meet as well for their quarterly meeting. So we can do all of those meetings in one day. You remember that's a little bit of just a day. Yeah, it makes for a long day, but it's doable.
It's yeah.
Yeah. So does the 13th work for everyone?
13th is fine.
Never mind.
I've worked for me.
Okay. So Finance and Audit Committee first, call it 9 a.m. Then 10 a.m. we'll do the board meeting, full board.
You go.
Yep. We also have to do executive committee meeting. And
we do.
Yeah, we do all the committees that day.
One other committee, yeah, with the exception of your committee, the other committee has to meet as well to do review the charter.
Charter.
The operations committee have to meet.
Correct. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot to do. At the end of the year, in between hours.
How else are you going to do that?
Finance and operations committees. They could meet at the same time.
I have to be in both.
Oh, that's right.
Since those don't usually take as long, and we do the 9 to 10, all of the committees. Because they don't take long, and instead of doing the board meeting at 10 o'clock, we push it to 10:30 just to have that gap, yeah. And so everything can be handled during. It's
fine with me.
It's going to take that.
Do we have to post to schedule them for OMA? Do we have to post them specifically, and would that create issues then if we're 20 minutes for each or something like that? And
the answer to your question is yes, we do have to post them for.
So we couldn't just say like. An hour and a half for these three meetings. It would have to be this one at this time, this one at this time, this one at this time.
Yeah.
But the good thing is that when we post start time until adjourn. We don't post like a specific time, but
we still have to post all the start times.
All the start times. There's flexibility. There's when we're running late a few minutes, we don't start exactly on time, but they know generally that's the time that we're to start. And I was looking back when I saw the training committee come up for this meeting. I was looking back, we did it all together last year in the board meeting, but we had the success one after the other just real quick. There weren't any changes, so we were able to have them in a very compressed amount of time.
And what we could do, rather than complicating it and have a dial in for each, we'll just do one dial in for all of them, which gives us that flexibility, even if it's posted, as long as the recorded start time is addressed, it should be fine. So we won't create a dial in for each single one of them.
One potential wild card, though, for the Plan of Operations Committee, if we do have feedback from Department of Insurance, that may be a longer meeting than typically, correct?
Could be, yeah.
You need two separate for the executive committee meeting?
The executive committee meeting is going to be, it's usually a...
We're just in case you go into session.
Yeah, because the executive committee is going to go into executive session. So we would that would be, yeah. But for the rest, could be
one. Okay.
One. So essentially two, one for the executive. When it goes into
to your point, Garrett, if we do get feedback and need to discuss whatever changes were suggested or directed by TDI, then that'll be a little bit more drawn out. But the that could happen at the board level, the charter amendments, and all the Plan of Operation Committee and so forth. Their charters are what we're looking at. So those are two separate things. Yeah. If we're considering the full plan of operation and possible changes come back from TDI, that'll be a board item. And then the committee will be looking at its charter, see if there's any changes it wants to make to its charter.
We could always tentatively say put it all in one day and get this done, and we don't have to post these for quite a while. So if something changes and there's a need to expand it into 2 days or do something, or push back discussion to further, we could deal with that later. And our goal at this point is to do it all on the 13th, and then
And this, and keep in mind that the charters just have to be reviewed. If we don't have anything, and then lo and behold, we've got some changes in the plan of operation that's going to impact the charters, we can always go back.
That could be done in March or
In March or special meeting or what have you to make those appropriate changes. But the just once a year that we have to do an annual review.
Then everybody good with setting the tentative date for December as the 13th and doing all the committee meetings and the board meeting in one day, just understanding it's going to be a long day. And if there's a reason to change that, we've got time to do that before posting it.
Yes.
I mean, that's good to me.
Good with me.
Good to hear. So, any further discussion or questions on the time? Greg, do you have a recommendation for the board this time?
Well, we'll just put those tentative dates on your calendar. Okay. I don't think you're the motion for that. Okay. Make sure everybody's comfortable. So Tuesday the 29th at 2, and then December 13th, 9 a.m.
Full day,
whenever.
Because I did the same thing.
Thank you, Greg. Going to our last and favorite agenda item. There being no other business before the board, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
You can look out and make some.
Second.
Jason Cables.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no.
No.
Well, the ayes have it. Meeting is adjourned at 11:27 a.m. on September 27th.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Was that you who said no? Just a.